I call this meeting to order. Please stand for the flag salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. May we have the roll call?
Councilmember Deedy?
Here.
Councilmember Oglesby?
Here.
Councilmember Wisnowski?
Here.
Councilmember De Leon?
Here.
Councilmember O'Donnell?
Here.
We have a quorum, Mayor.
Thank you. So this work session is on the subject of the fire study, and I've asked May to come and explain how the property tax works so everybody will understand that there's not going to be any big influx of sustainable income. So I'm going to let May go first, and then you guys can decide what you want to talk about. May?
Hey, thank you, Mayor. Well, had it all arranged, but it's not. Can you see that?
We don't see anything yet.
So, Christiana, did you say yes?
No, I don't see it yet either.
Okay. All right. Let me see if it's... All right. There, I think. Is that...
There we go. Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. So first, I really wanted to talk about kind of the difference between how Washington State does their property tax versus what other states do. Because I think a lot of confusion is in how it's set originally and then how it's increased each year. So Washington State has what's called a budget-based property tax structure, and it's pretty complicated, but I call it kind of a guaranteed property tax structure. And what that means is that every year you can increase your property tax, but only by a certain percent. And when I used to work for Kent many years ago, it was 6%. And every year cities would increase their property tax 6%. And homeowners are going like, this is ridiculous. And Tim Iman came along and agreed, and he got his initiative passed, and Washington State kind of agreed with that. And so since then, they have limited the increase to 1%. And what that means is every year, county and cities and districts all are going to be guaranteed that they're going to get at least 1% more than they got last year, as long as they adopt the extra 1%. They don't even have to. They can adopt exactly the same amount as last year. So what that means is that they then value all the properties, and within the whole property tax base, split up that dollar amount so it will equal either zero if you adopt that or the 1%. Cities over 10,000 can't even adopt 1%. They have to go by implicit price deflator, which is a different percent. I think it was less than 1% last year. So it's a guaranteed system that helps. It really helps both the property owners and the city, because right now it can only in total go up 1%. However, the new people that are building brand new homes that never were taxed before are going to start paying their share. So I will talk about how the construction is valued separately, because there is a value for construction, but how it's figured out is very complicated. But I'll try to go into that. So what I used to explain is if you have an apartment and you say, I want to get $10,000. I have four units and each one of them are going to pay $2,500 a year equally. And so the following year, you're going, wow, my property tax went up. I better raise the amount that I'm collecting. I'm going to now collect 10% or 1% more. So now he's going to get $10,100. Again, if nothing happened to any of the four apartments, nobody remodeled, nobody got bigger space, they would equally split that. However, if one of the people said, hey, I would like to knock out the wall, and one of the people moved out, now I want to rent half of it. And not only that, but I'm going to improve mine. So then he's still only going to get his $10,100, but now he has to split it between the three people that are out there. So one is remodeled, so that affects the value. I can charge them a little more. The other two just stayed exactly the same. So now they only may pay 45% and the other one pays 55%. That's basically how the basic structure in property tax works. And what's complicated is it's not just homes as you think of it. It's businesses. It's the real property that they have inside of the businesses. That has value too. It's the land the business sets on, and even vacant land. So all of those go into this big old model to try to figure out values. So each year when we bring the property tax to you, we say, would you like to go ahead and do the 1% or do you want zero? And then council votes and decides. So far each year we've done the 1%, because then that's a base that now you can add your 1% on. If you didn't adopt it, you'd still be back at the 10,000, and you could, in other words, you couldn't keep increasing. So we've done that. Other states, and I've got that, I sent that out to you ahead of time, but other states do it differently. They go ahead and they say, no, you have to decide what rate you want to pay, and then we'll determine the value and then we'll send out the bills. So their rates may really go up when the economy's good, or really go down when the economy's bad. Our system, because it stays guaranteed every year, it pretty much keeps us safe from those swings in inflation. So I think even though 1% isn't very good, I think it's a good a business for us to do. Okay. So this shows then how that affects our mill rate, since the dollar rate is going to be the same no matter whether times are good or times are bad. You can see that the evaluation in 2013 had dropped to its very lowest. It was a depression. At that time, we had laid off two police officers and a planner. The city was really struggling, not only with property tax, because it was guaranteed what we were going to get, but our other revenue was really going down. Times were bad. And so we went to the voters and said, our mill rate is really low. It was $1.70, I believe, $78 when we first took the proposal to the county. We need to raise our mill rates, and you can do that for 6 years if you have a need. So we went to the county and we said, we need to put all of our property tax to public safety. We need to make sure we can pay police and fire and court and emergency service. So we took it to the voters, and I believe it didn't pass the first time. We went back to the voters and it did pass. So you can see that the levy rate changed, and it only changed for 6 years. The rate we started with, and it went right back to the old formulas, where now we only got 1% or 1% over that value that it started at every single year, even though it stayed on the books for 6 years. So you can see that as our assessed valuation, the value of the property goes up, the mill rate, which is, they just divide one into the other, goes down, so we can still collect the same dollar. I'd prepared this a few years ago. Right now we're at $1.90. And we can go to $3.10. So we're way under the allowed mill rate. You wouldn't want to go probably to 310 because that would be a significant increase for our citizens. So you want to keep in mind, we only need to raise it by the amount we really want. And we've got to be mindful that we don't want to overburden our citizens with too high a rate. So I called King County and talked to Laura Wilder, who's works in our property tax section, and asked her, to go over how does new construction figure then? If we know how the base amount is figured, how on earth do you figure out what new construction? And she said they have a very complicated model that they use for new construction. And I'll go over that in just a second. Let me close this one down and go to one more. Oh, here is it. So I just pulled this out of our budget, and I'm not going to go over all this narrative, but you can see our property tax last year when we put the budget together was about 56% of all of our tax, sales tax 24.9, and utility tax 19. So that's all of our taxes. So if you look at line 2, property tax, and over way over on the right, we budgeted $2,014,434 for 2021. And you can see, if you look down the revenue, that sales tax is way less. All of our other revenue is less, except line 10, the community development revenue.
And
yes.
Back on that pie chart is... Uh-huh. What are cities like us? What's the average mix? Are we average?
Let me show it in just a few minutes here. Okay. I have a kind of graph that I bet will help answer that. So okay. If you look at line 17, our revenue that we budgeted in 2020, $7,347,000. And then if you go down to the expenditures, $7,749,000. So we're spending $300,000 more than all of our revenue. So we have to pull other money from fund balance to run the city. And that's okay as long as you have a reasonable fund balance, but the state likes you to have enough revenue to cover your expenditures. So why a city is really at that position is because the 1% property tax amount, let's see, go back up. Yeah, I'll go on down here. The 1% property tax amount is only about $15,000. We do have some new construction and that helps. But the police and fire, public safety, they have a 16% increase. That added an officer and it added our other increases. The 1% we got in increase for property tax last year didn't even cover the increase we had for fire, let alone the increase for court or the increase for public safety. So we're always at a deficit. So we've just got to always have extra money coming in from sales tax and any other revenue we have because of our limitations in property tax.
But hey, May, can I jump in just for a second?
Yes.
So the 1%, that's correct, but we also received $200,000
right.
in the new construction, right?
Yes, and I'm going to show that right now.
Yeah, so that's 10%. So just for apples to apples, you know,
right.
When we're looking at where we're adding.
Right. So you can see line 1 as our base, and then each year we added our 1%. We got 14,000, 14, 14, 14, 14, 15, 16. That was last year. And this year we got 18. I mean, it's just a really small amount. But if you go down to the next line, when we're not doing a lot of growth, we only from new construction, that's some remodels or some improvements, 11,000, 3,000, 11,000, 13, 11. Finally, we started some growth. We got 9,500. last year now, we're finally starting to do some houses. We got 200,000. And King County gave an estimate this year that we could probably get 200,000 more. And I'll go again in a minute on how they calculate that 200,000. So even at that, that doesn't cover the public safety increases. And that 200,000 is only going to be there as long as we're having a lot of new construction. So as long as that stayed there, we have that. But if you're going to add permanent things, if you ever have a time where they say, okay, now we've kind of built out down here, or things turned bad, now we have to slow down for a while, because they have several years after they do a permit before they have to have it finished. This could go away and we'd be back to our 18 or 20,000. So we just have to be cautious and aware that that's not always sustainable money, and it hasn't really grown significantly to cover huge increases. This amount this year did not cover the public safety increase. And this again just shows, and it shows our value now. If you go down to the first kind of blue line there, our value has definitely gone way up, but all that did was pull down our rates. You can see our rate was 2.621 back in 2014. Now we're down at 1.90. So when they just divide those two and say, here's how much you're going to get, that's how they figure that rate. And then we're in four different school districts in Black Diamond. So a taxpayer will pay about $11.45 if they're in the Enumclaw school district, that's per thousand, Tahoma $12.60, Kent $11.37, and Auburn $13.48. Primarily, that's the local school district levies, because a lot of times they come in with new levies each year because they need technology, or they need books, or they need to build new schools. That primarily drives the increases anybody sees on their property tax bill, because the resident will only see that if no other house went up in value, they would see 1%. But if somebody else remodeled or there was a lot more people in there, they could actually see a decrease in what is paid to Black Diamond. The taxes go, I would say, about 60% for schools. King County gets some emergency medical service, the flood levy. So all kinds of different amounts of levy. And then this was done a couple of years ago when we had a $386,000 appraised home. So Black Diamond gets 20% of all the money. Everybody else gets their percent. So on that kind of home, they'd pay about $3,578. However, Black Diamond would only get $666.90, or $55.57 a month. So I think that's a reasonable rate for Black Diamond, and at a rate that perhaps could be increased to some amount if we do a lid lift. I did look at what other cities have. And most of their rates, depending on if they have a police and fire. If you don't have police and fire, your rates are lower. That doesn't mean the property people pay less. They pay it through their district piece of the tax. So it just goes to a different line. So most of the people are around in the same ballpark. It depends if you're contracting for service or if you have your own service. There's a lot of different factors. And I didn't bring any other comparable with me. I could get some and forward it to you, but I don't have any right now with me.
Martin had a schedule that showed people that had contracted and people that were annexed in. And one of his slides shows different cities.
It only showed the city portion, so that if they were contracted, it wouldn't go to the city, but it would go on another line, and he didn't show all their lines.
But it showed what kind of income those cities had. it compared their income. Because that was Chris's question.
Yeah.
Where did they get, how many people got how much sales tax? He had a slide that showed how much sales tax and how much property tax.
Right, he did. And the thing that he pointed out was almost all of them had way, way, way more sales tax than we do. And so we're limited because we have such a small sales tax base. It's very hard for us to absorb or make up differences. And then with that small amount of guarantees we have each year on property tax, we're pretty limited. So each year, King County sends me this worksheet, and the column on the left is the column that they give me, and I don't have any choice in these numbers. These are the numbers that a city under 10,000 can levy. They say, last year, your levy was $1,884,197. If you add 1%, you're going to get $1,903,039. And then they said, here's the value of your new construction. But we're not going to use this year's mill rate of 190. We're going to use a prior year because it says last year's regular levy. So they're going to use 188.3 and they're going to value that at 200,000. So if you take that 106 million, divide it by 1,000, multiply it times that 1.88, you'll see it comes out exactly to 200,000. Then they say, this is how much you are going to get if you adopt the 1%. None of the other numbers are negotiable. They're set. Some years, the line that says zero increase in utility values, about every 6 years, they reevaluate state utilities, and we get a small increase based on that, kind of like new construction, I believe. But what Linda Weiler told me on the new construction is that the model is very, very complicated. We are in District 57. So if you see it in the newspaper, it'll say Southeast King County. It'll be usually at the bottom of the comparison when they show all the growth and sales and everything. And that's called Southeast King County District 57. And that includes part of Maple Valley. They have a huge model. It's about 19 pages long. That they put many, many factors in to come up with this new construction value. They use a prior 3 years sale information for 2018, 19, and 20. They go out and they take photographs of the development, and they'll take a photograph maybe in May and then in June, and see what percent of the homes are completed that are started. And then they may say, oh, I see, that one is only 20% complete. So that builder would only get a value of 20% of what a normal value of it would be when it's finished. We have to upload our permit, new construction value for both remodel and new construction. They try to value each one of those. What percent are those completed? The model is a regression statistical tool that they use. And it takes views into consideration. It takes how new and how old everything, and it does. 1 year they will do just the 10 trails by itself. 1 year they will do commercial. 1 year they will do land. They only have to do it every 6 years. And since they have all of King County, it's pretty limited. I would say maybe every other year they hit one area, and then it's stuck with at least 2 year old information on the values. It's the sale value is one tiny piece of their model. They like to look at all the different characteristics and conditions. They do ratio analysis. They smooth for high and low so that it's more of a reasonable amount. You know, when you get your own property tax statements, every year I look at mine and I think, wow, I didn't know my house was worth that much. that must have been the year they did residence in Auburn. The next two or three years, it doesn't go up at all. And I'm going, that's interesting. Or 1 year, it'll go way down. Well, that's when they did commercial, and commercial was going up. What Linda told me is Seattle right now, since everybody is kind of abandoning their businesses in the tall buildings downtown and leaving them vacant, and the apartments and all the places where people's vacationers stay, all those values have gone way down, which all it did though was drive up what the citizens are going to have to pay, because they still are in that 1% and new construction, and they're not doing as much new construction right now. So it just kind of juggles the amount people are paying. She said that they also, they use trending, they use splines. I don't know what a spline was, because she'll say some areas are going up and others are going down, and they have to average them all. So they take all kinds of information, including information from Maple Valley, and put it all together in their 19-page model and come out with these dollar amounts they give us. So it's not anything we have much control over. You can see it's about 10% of what our tax amount was. So I can look at it and anticipate each year we might get 10% in new construction. But that still is just a hunch. And I don't really have any control over how they do their values for that year. She said they use mass appraisal of real property, and they have standards on and ratio studies. They use a lot of stuff for trending. It's a very complicated model. I sent you the link that you can go into, and they will try to explain that better. But when I do my tax each year, I have to adopt, you can see in the middle there, our assessed valuation of all the property, $1 billion. That's the first time we've ever been that high. We were, you know, in the last, what, 7 or 8 years, we've kind of doubled in value. And that is good, but it doesn't give us a whole bunch of extra property tax. You can see our rate at 190. And down at the bottom, even though we can do 1%, they're saying, well, you really don't get a whole 1%. You only get 0.72, which is less than 1%, the way they look at it. So when they came down to the end, they said, this is how much you're going to get. And when I give you that levy to adopt, I have to not put 1% in there, but 0.72 to adopt. And they put out these, we usually get the first one towards the end of September. We get others throughout the time, because the new construction is the hardest part for them to figure out. And they're still working on it right up through November. Usually it's December before we will get a final number. And that's why they allow us to estimate a little higher amount for new construction in case their model picked up more. They just reduce it down to what their model actually shows, even if we adopt a little bit. So I usually adopt maybe 50,000 higher, just in case they found some other that would go into their regression model and come out with more money. And then they lower it down to the exact amount that they get each year. I did talk to King County, and they are willing to come out and do a presentation for council. I thought perhaps we could wait until the new council come on, and that way they'd have advantage of that. And they'll probably talk about what they're seeing in the different areas, and certainly would be available to answer questions about the new construction. That was the part that was the hardest for me to really understand and explain. But I did really read through all their models. I spoke not only to the lady at the assessor's office who gives me this information, but also the lady at the new construction modeling department. And she was the one that sent me that link then that I sent you. So do you have any other questions about this? It is a bit complicated, but I think it's a fairly fair with a base amount. The one that changes is if you are going in a period of new construction, they do go through this model and you do get some money from that. But if it is to slow down, it would also go back down and you'd still be limited to your 1%. But the new construction helps the new taxpayers pay. So the existing taxpayers are still only paying their 1%. The new people are the one and the builders who are building, because all their bills go out, not only to the sold homes, but to the builders. But they're usually assessed at a percentage of what they think their construction is worth.
Thank you, May.
Mayor Benson, may I just make one additional comment? So I think it was Councilmember Wisnowski who was asking about comparisons to other cities, what in terms of the proportion that the property tax is of their general fund revenue. And I think it was slide 24 on Martin's last presentation.
Yeah, I don't have that here with me right now, but I can look at that. And I also have some information from MRSC that talks about, you know, what other cities comparison of property tax, or I can try to get back in and get Martin's and get that out to you, showing that most cities, I would say, is at least double what their property tax is. But the kind of the bad thing is when economy is bad, usually sales is what falls. So they could have big swings and be laying, and you'll hear they're laying off a lot of staff because they're not selling cars or their hotels are not rented. So it also has its fluctuation, where our property tax does give us a base, as long as we remember that and keep close to that base until we grow our property tax and are mindful of how the two pieces work together.
So for more of this conversation, May, could you explain a little bit more for us about the lead lift and also about where this would fit in with the conversation around especially the fire department and any additional things we should be keeping in mind as we're potentially looking at that as part of the solution?
Yes, I have a bunch of information on that. I didn't pull it tonight, but you have to determine how many dollars you need, because it goes right back to this same model. And so you have to say, I need 600,000 or a million or whatever, and it's going to pay for. And it can be for public safety again. I know Jamie is still down one officer, and usually one officer and a vehicle and guns and training and all that's about 275,000. We're looking at fire costs here. It could, you know, and the lid lift wouldn't have to pay for everything we need, because there are some other sources, as Martin brought out, of revenue. But as a potential, you have to come up with a dollar amount. You have to say how it's going to be used. And then there's quite a lengthy process where you have to adopt it, I think, as a council. Then it has to go to the King County and they adopt it, and then it has to go, you have to do your pros and cons, you have to pay extra, have it on a ballot. People vote then, and they, you know, figure out how much is that going to raise people's property tax. Then they vote if that's a good deal and they want to go for that. And then it's the following year, depending on, I believe it would be too late this year to get anything that would affect next year. So it would be the year after that. Before we would have something. There are consultants out there that help put together bond levies. I followed Medina's last year. They had a public safety because of the same reason, the 1% doesn't keep track. And they did a successful lid lift last year, and they had a consultant help put it together and help advertise it and help have all the meetings for the citizens to really understand what they were doing and why. And then they also put a budget together that said, if this doesn't pass, here's what we're going to do. We're going to cut this, we're going to cut that. So there was kind of the pro and con of that. And it was really very successful and it passed. So I think once we decide, you know, council decides an avenue they want to go and how much we need, and we need to look at the other potential revenue sources that Martin talked about, and I can do some additional analysis on fine-tuning some of those amounts.
Thank you.
Help show what the pros and cons of some of those might be and what some of the amounts might be. But I would think that first we need to really know what options we're going to go and then how much that might cost, so that we know what target we're even looking at. And while that's going on, I can be looking at putting together some revenue options and you know, combinations of options, because probably not just one. We surely wouldn't want to just go out and just do all property tax. We really need to look at some other combinations of revenues to be the most effective, I would think.
May.
Yes.
I have just a couple of questions, but one for Brenda really quick. Brenda, August 20th, 2009, the council had a work study and on the fire service. And I was hoping that maybe we could get that sent to council. And that was Ron Taylor did a presentation, and it still stands true today. So
okay, August 3rd, 2009. Okay.
Yeah, August 20th.
August 20th, sorry. Okay.
So that would be good to send to council. So May, I haven't heard anything, you know, looking over Ron's presentation that he did in 2009 when he was on the council. He had mentioned that, you know, during that time we were on council, we were paying the police department $1.7 million to run and paying the fire $500,000. Today, I think we're at over $2 million to run the police and at $600,000 to run the fire department. I haven't heard from finance committee or from the safety committee, where is the need in the police department, you know, because we're a growing city, obviously we're not paying enough in our fire. So, you know, but police has continued to grow and get that funding. So I'm just curious, you know, at what point are you going to, is the city going to say, and the council going to say, we also need to go out for more funding for the police, yeah, you know, because all that funding right now is being sent over to police and still keeping the fire low in cost. So we have to, you know, balance them out appropriately. And in this study, it shows that, you know, we're not doing that right now with the fire department. So is, you know, when we go out, because we have to go out to the citizens to say, you know, it doesn't matter which option we choose, we still need to go out to the citizens. So I'm just curious, you know, we still need, you know, we need to get our fire department back up in the right cost bracket. We obviously need money for a new police station, a new city hall, new public works area. I know these were put into the study. We also need a city administrator. So, you know, there's a lot of costs involved in this whole thing, you know, and our main goal is to bring the fire up to its rightful place. But I'm just kind of curious on how it all works together on your end, May, of what you see coming down, you know, especially with the police. I mean, we're already up to $2.5 million. So, you know, when we go out for the safety lid lift, you know, are we talking, we're going to have to just say for fire, or are we going to have to go out and say for police?
Yeah, those wouldn't be my decision. They would be right. Council's decisions.
But I'm just asking for your guidance, because you're our finance director, and you look at both of those budgets.
Right.
And you would have the knowledge to say, you know, hey, you know, coming up quick is you're going to have to go out for more money to ask the residents for police. And we know we need to go out for fire right now. So,
yeah, I would say just generally, you certainly couldn't go out probably more than every 6 years. So you got to be really careful what you ask for and how long it's going to last. And as we are growing, and hopefully our sales tax will start to grow one of these days, and that will really help us a lot in these future, and the number of citizens will eventually grow. Right now, our problem is we're still at 5,200 citizens, and that's a pretty small city for the costs and the things we're looking at. And so that's why it was interesting to see some of the other kind of smaller cities and most of the smaller cities using volunteer fire departments because they couldn't really afford that. And other cities, you know, I wouldn't know what council will decide on police. And we haven't talked about that at all. Right now, tonight's, I think, is about fire and trying to figure out what direction council wants to go. And I certainly will put together some models showing revenue. I have some ideas on how we might be able to do a what if model to plug in some revenues and expenditures and show how that would affect the fund balance. We just always have to remember we're still a small city and we have small sales tax base. And until those two grow, there's a lot of things we want, a lot of things I would like to have too, but I have to look at, you know, how much can I really afford and tailor it down to that and try to be as smart about it as we can, you know, too.
I just had a few follow-up questions. The first one I had earlier, which is more about the lid lift again and about the timeline, because we are also under pressure with the contract ending. And how would the levy lid lift fit in with the current timing that we would need in order to make sure that we're continuing services to some extent? But I guess I'll start with that question for now.
Yeah, I didn't prepare a lid lift. I know that the consultant had asked if we wanted a lid lift. I don't know if he has any budget left. I could check with him and see if there's budget left that he could do a timeline and help with that.
That would be really helpful if we could do that. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, please.
I'll put that on my list.
May, I believe that was in one of the slides too. So he talked about how long it would take to do a lid lift. So you can look in Martin's slideshow because it was in there too. So you don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Okay.
Just go through those slides. Or the council can go through the slides and look them up.
I have a couple comments. One is, I think the average resident would be wondering, why are we doing a levy lid lift when we have all these new houses coming in? And the general would be something to the effect that, why aren't they paying their fair share? And so I know that there's a very good explanation to that, but it's something that's going to be the general. I can already see it on Facebook.
Yeah.
That's what the comments are going to be. Why are we being taxed when we have all these newbies coming in? Why aren't they paying their fair share? Why are we being taxed more? You would think that the burden on the average person should be less because there's more people coming in. The cost should be spread out by more residents. So that's a big lift for the levy lift. To be able to explain, I think, to the average person. So I'm also concerned that May, bless her heart, her job is to be super conservative, make sure we are projecting right. But I don't have a good handle on what are our actual projections. So I know that the Washington State sales tax, we don't really want to rely on, but I see from the 2020 estimate was 946,000, and in 2021, we're projecting to be under that in sales tax, 898. We know that there's a lot more construction going on now, and I expect more into the rest of the year, that we should be blowing it out of the water from 2020 versus 2021 and 2022, I would expect would be even substantially more. So I'm wondering, it should be at least equal to 2020. 2021, not less. And so I'm worried are we being too cautious because we seem to be exceeding it each year, and now we're understating it. The other is that if you look at the property tax, it looks like the real number is between 10 and 11%, right, is what we're getting increase from 2019 to 2020. We know that 2019, there was not nearly as much activity going on as there was in 2020. And 2020 was a pandemic. So 2021, I would expect that it should be increasing at least 10 to 11% or substantially more. And if the trend keeps going up and King County is looking in the rearview mirror and setting our rates, I would like to understand more of that. That's great that they're being conservative too, and it's less of an impact on our citizens. But we need to have a good handle on what are our actual projections. How many hundreds of thousands of dollars more are we going to get year over year over year? That is sustainable, and it's new construction on the property tax. That sets a new base.
Yes.
That doesn't go away.
Right.
I want people to not be confused about the property tax. New construction is not a one-time deal. That's staying. That be adjusted by 11% year over year right now. And so that should help soften the blow to some extent. I know that we've had some big investments on public safety, and if it's running at 14% right now, we need to look at that. But it is still an increase, a substantial increase, and I'm not sure that we're going to be able to justify the lid lift. We need to be able to explain that to the common resident that's going to be really wondering, why are you taxing me more?
Right.
Well, Bernie, let me answer that question. So what is going to happen is we would hire a consultant, whether it's through Martin or somebody, if it's through FCS or somebody else. He already has a consultant that he uses for other people that do levy lid lifts, and they do the education and public outreach portion of that. It wouldn't be up to us, the city, or may the city to figure it out. It would be up to that consultant to figure out how to advertise it to get buy-in from the residents of the city. That's how that would work. And there was a timeline in Martin's presentation that talked about how long he thought it would take to do a levy lid lift.
To follow up on that, because my question did pertain to the timeline, I understand there's a rough timeline in the presentation that pertains to especially the election side of it. I am just kind of wondering if, especially though tonight, and possibly I could have clarified this question a little bit more, you know, for maybe I can also resend that to May if that also helps for tonight to kind of show that part of the presentation for residents who are on this call today to kind of look at what we were talking about. The other part to that though was the timeline part about where hiring a consultant or working with a consultant might also fit in with that timeline. And also more about the role of that election. I mean, I know we went into it a little bit, but I think it helps to know that the consultant, for example, would be doing more of the work, and this would be less on the city. But I think walking through those parts as they pertain to both the contract and to the public outreach would be helpful. And I realize that's kind of a multifaceted question. So it might be a little bit on, can we show the slides today? And then also walk through a little bit for especially residents on the call today, where that potential lid lift works in terms of both the contractor and also with the election cycle.
Yeah, I believe there were possibly some options that we could have the consultant do some, come back and do some additional if we need it. And I would have to look at the original contract and work with David on that. But I believe there were some options in there to have some additional work done. And that could be helpful. I know that I am working on trying to get a model developed so that it can do what if scenarios so that we can add sustainable, non-sustainable, good, bad, you know, like three versions like we did when we looked at the utility tax increases so that we can say, well, what if this happened? What if that happened? So looking to see if we can use the same person that we use to do our utility tax increases to build a baseline model that would be for the general fund that would split up revenues into sustainable, non-sustainable, high growth, low, medium, whatever, and then be able to add what if scenarios in there. What if we did this? What if we did that? So that we could look at the bottom line and see what might happen in different scenarios.
I think that would be
But it will take probably take a month or so maybe to build that, because we have to put a contract together and he has to build the models and do that. But I think we really need that to look at all the, you know, we need it really for budgeting every year, and it would be a good model we could update every year at budget time as people come forth with, oh, we'd like to do this, we'd like to do that. We could plug them into the model and see how that did affect the bottom line of the model.
I think that would be really helpful too, because, you know, we did get that that quick walkthrough during the presentation for each possible scenario, but it is really that 10,000 foot glance, you know. Yeah. It's more like kind of telling you like an almost more of an election cycle and how that fits in. Yeah. Which is helpful, but that doesn't tell you the day-to-day work of what does that mean to hire a contractor? What does that mean to do this part, and how that fits in more holistically with a more complex Black Diamond specific contract. So I think everything that you just raised, May, would be something really worth pursuing. And if there's anything left in the budget to really delve more into that, that could be in our best interest, especially if we really do have to plan for success of what that means to be working with our residents and our neighbors about what it means to potentially be paying more for a service we need to pay more for.
I think Andy had a comment. Okay.
Good evening, council members. As the person who did the FSC study with them, I would just hopefully try to remind you, we have a 3-year, a call from the fire district that they will cease service. We have only a year and a half roughly to get this done. So while I appreciate our finance director's great analysis on how property tax analysis work, and we can go into coma state as we deep analyze that, this staff, my charge by you, was to present to you 4 options, deep research those options and bring those forward. I would remind the council, hopefully, that Chief Smith, and I see different commissioners are also into this meeting tonight also, is a contract takes 2 parties. I would hope we would not head down the path and the District 44 Mountain View decides they don't want to be part of this party. I would highly encourage you to determine a path so that we can work that, because until that path is determined, May will spend a lot of time and energy looking at 4 options. We'll all spend a lot of time at 4 option. Time is very, very limited on this to maintain the life and safety services that our citizens need to happen. So I just put that into part of your conversation, but we've provided you multiple studies to look at. We've provided all the detail and analysis. I would hope that we would head down the path and in conversation to give direction to the mayor, to have her staff do whatever you ultimately decide. But I would highly encourage you that time is not on our side at this point. We will run out of time and we'll need to do something quite urgently.
So. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Council Member Didi.
So Andy, thank you. I was going to jump in and talk to the council exactly about that. You know, we have a work study tonight, but what we need to do is decide, you know, there is 4 options on the table. I think that, you know, I've already said, you know, my 2 options were, you know, you can contract with Mountain View Fire or you can contract and annex in, you know, so those were my 2 thoughts. But in the meantime, we need to negotiate with Mountain View and, just like Andy said, know where they stand and where they plan on going with their fire department, you know, so they can make their future plans just like we do. We have a, you know, a 10-year, 15-year outlook, 5-year outlook on certain things, that they need to do the same. So this council needs to say, you know, we need to go ahead and ask the mayor to have her staff start negotiating with Mountain View And so that they also know an end game with the city. So does the city plan on contracting forever? You know, do we plan on having them come in and do the fire service, but we maintain all the equipment and everything? And how is that cost going to affect us? Or do we want to annex in and have that cost spread throughout all the district? If both parties agreed to annex in, then that cost would also be a little less for the city. I know May is probably like, yeah, you know, you lose some revenue there. But it also takes us out of the fire service. And then, you know, we also have the police department that I talked about earlier that is just climbing in revenue. You know, it's a big chunk of our revenue and it's only going up. So I did talk to the mayor earlier today about all this. And one of the concerns is, you know, about, you know, we have this brand new gorgeous fire station coming and a fire engine coming. Do we want to hand those over, you know, to a district and lose, you know, control over those? One thing I did see in one of the agreements from another city they did was where they leased the fire station, and I think it was just their fire station for $1, like we do with the museum. We own the building, but they maintain it and keep everything up to code and safety stuff in there. So, I mean, that's definitely an option, but we have to talk to Mountain View and just also see where their thoughts and is in on all this. I know that every city that I looked at that did this, they formed a group, you know, with the fire department, the commissioners, some council members, citizens, and staff from the mayor. And they looked at, you know, the options that the council wanted to look at. They formed that committee. They met, I think most of them were like 5 or 6 meetings. They had a person that was, you would call neutral, that led it and kind of helped them go through all the steps to see what, you know, is the best option for the residents and then move forward from there. So, I mean, there's still a lot to talk about, but I think for tonight, we at least need to figure out, you know, where everybody stands on, you know, everybody's opinion on what we should be moving forward and having at least that discussion started for contract services and get that at least going with Mountain View and the city.
Councilmember Oglesby.
Tammy, you took the words right out of my mouth. I'm right with you. I do believe we have two options in my opinion. I do believe that either we work with a contract or we contract and annex in. I'm in favor of both of those. I'd like to see the workout played out, how that's gonna look with the city. And same with you, Tammy. I do feel my concern with our police and how our funds are working with that as well. But those are the two that I'm leaning toward. If that helps any of the decisions moving forward in this, I'm leaning to those two decisions.
Councilmember Wisnowski.
Well, I was going to give some big speech about all this, and now I'm just going to say ditto. We've got a decision to make, right? We need to move forward. I think our best two choices are to continue to contract, or what I think is the best long-term choice for us is to contract until we can afford to annex. And we need to figure those cost models out, right? And that's the big thing, right? How do we figure out, okay, if we annex in and they get the $150 off the top, where do we fill that hole with, right? And we're not only filling the hole, but we have to fill that, you know, just like May was saying, right? We got to plan for 6 years at least for anything, right? We got to, that's would be a, if we went to a lid lift, right? So we need to think about future plans as well for both fire and for police, right? Public safety is our biggest charge as council members to keep our community safe, right? I really think we've got two choices. We need to let the district know that we want to continue to work with them. We're happy with the work they've been doing so far. We are in a spot where we don't have a lot of income. We can't do this overnight, right? It's not a thing where we can just say, oh, here's an extra 600K. So we need to wait until we can figure this out. So it's going to be a multi-step approach, but I think we need to put those models together and move forward.
Councilmember O'Donnell.
Well, I guess I'd humbly say, I believe that, and I've said this before, there is really only one true option in front of us right now. Annexing in to whatever agency, whatever department, it requires a vote of the people. What's in front of us right now, time is of the essence. I believe that we need to put our best people, the mayor, Andy, our city attorney, and whoever is the subject matter experts, and negotiate the best terms we can with Mountain View Fire District, at least for a couple years, and tap into our dollars that we have right now, and give ourselves a buffer. It doesn't mean that we can't annex in the future to or that we could go it alone and have our own fire department, but we have to, the smart thing to do tonight would be to say the mayor and our best staff that can negotiate the best deal, get with Mountain View Fire Department and negotiate a 2 or 3 year deal. That buys us some time. Concurrent with that, we should be looking at what our revenue resources, our options there to make sure we can afford the best decision that we get, the best negotiation that we get. But we don't have to, at the end of the day, right now, everything else is gonna be more dollars. If we stand up our own fire department, or we attempt to get an annexation and a vote of the people and the time that takes to happen, there's no certainty that that's gonna be any cheaper. You know, the cost of a fire service is the cost of the fire service. Annexing into some of these larger organizations, we may have even less say in our own destiny. So I would recommend that there's one option, and that is to put the best team forward to negotiate the best deal that we can get, and we concurrently try to figure out how we're going to get the revenue to pay for it. In the short term, luckily we have the money coming in, and there's not layoffs that's going to happen or anything like that. We have the money. There's what, $3.5 to $4 million in reserves right now, right? So we can afford to do this. We should be doing this, and we figure out the long-term payment of how we're going to do this. But in all cases, it's roughly about the same. All four options are roughly the same. Going it alone is probably going to have some upfront costs, but at the end of the day, it's the cost to maintain a number of fire department, you know, and it is what it is. So that's my thought. And I don't know why we keep turning this through. There's one option. I don't know where there's another option. Annexing in is time. You know, let's just move forward, put our people, the mayor can put her best people together and go sit down across the table with Mountain View Fire Department and we move forward. That's my input. I mentioned it 3 times. I'm done talking about it. That's my position. Thank you.
Councilmember De Leon.
Thank you. I did want to actually bring up back and put back on the table the options that included the RFA. It is an especially affordable option. We are still looking at the increase in, like, especially contract and professional firefighters. I'm asking this not because I don't appreciate the amazing work of our current fire service, and I really, this is not about that, but I do think that we should be looking a little bit more at the fact that we do have this additional option. It is still affordable. It is still working with professional fire services, and I would just wonder if we could possibly entertain this idea a little bit more.
Councilmember Deedy.
So that fire authority never even responded back to anybody. So I don't know why we would want to even annex into them. As far as what Councilmember O'Donnell was saying, I think, you know, we can continue to contract forever, of course. But why, I just don't see why the city needs to be in the fire business. I mean, if you want to start your own fire department, I think it's going to cost you, it's going to cost taxpayers a lot of money, not just, you know, for safety of the police department, which is going to hit $3 million a year. and to run a fire department. And then you've got to go out for another safety levy to say, hey, look, your fire department and your police are rising in costs. We need more money from both of you for both of those. And it's going to be quite expensive for residents here, under 6,000 residents, to afford our own fire department. And when you say, you know, our only option is to contract, it sounds like we're just kicking the can down the street again to say in 3 years, we're going to revisit this, and deja vu again for me for 10 years, 3 years down the road, I'm revisiting this again. And we're going to say, okay, we have this on the table. What does council want to do? Okay, we're going to contract for another 3 years, or we're going to contract for another four and figure it out. I think that that's not good for the council to do. I think that, you know, we need to have Andy and the mayor and our attorney sit down and figure out a contract. But I think that Mountain View deserves also to know where their end game is. What is their role as their fire service? Are they just going to still have a carrot dangling and say, in 3 years, we're going to revisit it again? And we may want you, we may not, but in 3 years, we'll look at it again. I don't think that's fair.
So just to follow up, though, I understand that the initial outreach, like, you know, we reached out originally to the RFA and didn't get a response, but I'm wondering if there was a more earnest request with a contract, if we would get a different response, because to say that the RFA would not be responsive to our needs in the city, you know, as a city, it just doesn't seem like it's a full sequitur there. So it's something that I just think we should at least explore a little bit more. Not to say anything about, again, our current fire service. I just am saying that I think it might be worth our time to pursue that a little bit more, with also knowing that time is of the essence.
Councilmember Oglesby.
With hearing all that and hearing some more input on with my council members here, I'm clear on my decision now. I'm ready to move forward with the annexing in and moving forward and getting our people going and maybe getting that contract, you know, a little bit while we work out the details and the financial, and really hope and push for our business revenue coming in our city, because that's going to be the one thing that's going to help us out when it comes to our revenue, our general funds and everything like that. We really need to push that business and taxes coming in. But I am ready with my decision, and I'm ready forward to have our people work with our lawyers and to move forward with that, what O'Donnell said, and get going with this. Okay, like you said, time is important.
Council Member Wisnowski.
I would agree. I would say that that's probably our best approach forward. We should work on getting together a pre-annexation agreement with the department, with the realization that it's not a thing that happens overnight. Annexation doesn't happen overnight. One, we've got to be able to figure out the cost model, figure out when we can afford the full cost, right? But then we have to plan out the vote and all that kind of stuff. So I think that's a good approach, is to look at that pre-annexation agreement and not keep kicking it down the road. I think we need to give the department some clarity on the future, as well as our citizens, right? Our citizens don't want to have to be hearing about this again in 3 years and having a worry, oh gee, are we going to have a fire department, or how are we going to have a fire department? We need to say, hey, you know what, we're here to do our job, we're going to make our decisions, we're going to say, let's look at annexation, let's figure out the cost model on annexation, put together a pre-annexation agreement, and put together that plan, right? It's going to be a multi-year, multi-phase plan of how we figure out how to get to the right cost that everybody's happy with. But I think that's the direction that I'd like to see.
So Brenda, how do we move forward? Can we have consensus at the meeting tonight, or do we have to wait till our next meeting and vote on it?
Yeah, I don't think David can also weigh in on that too. Go ahead, David, you're on.
Way to pass the hot potato, Brenda. I really appreciate that. No, it's this was a special meeting called to discuss these issues so the council can reach some final decisions on things. I would caution against reaching too much of a final decision because things are still a little bit in flux, but I think the council could certainly express what they think their direction should be. And if the direction is that staff led by the mayor should go and negotiate a new contract with the Mountain View Fire Department, and if that contract should include provisions for a future annexation or planning for like a pre-annexation type agreement, if the parties can come to that kind of an agreement, then that would be clear direction for us to start moving forward and then report back to council as things move along. As Mr. Williamson rightly pointed out, contracting takes two parties. It takes two to tango. So the most we can do is see where Mountain View is at. And with the council's direction that our instructions as a city, as a policy matter, are that we want to renew a contractual relationship with Mountain View with the goal of an eventual or at least potential annexation, then I think we can move forward in that direction.
Okay. Councilmember Oglesby?
I agree with that decision. I would support that idea.
Councilmember O'Donnell?
Yeah, I'm just a question for clarity. Isn't this just an administrative type of action that it doesn't require a vote by us? I mean, it's basically, if we are in consensus that the mayor and Andy and our council is going to try to have a negotiation and come up with the best deal with probably a provision that in the contract that to see if we can get an annexation. I think that's a great thing. That negotiation happens and you guys come back with it. And that's something that then we debate and vote on, right? Wouldn't that be how that works?
Yeah, correct, Mr. Councilmember O'Donnell. I think the idea behind getting council consensus tonight is so that we know we're not negotiating something you don't support, and so that the fire department knows that when we're negotiating, we're actually negotiating something that the council will likely be in support of. So good faith showing on both sides that this isn't just the mayor's instructions, that the council is behind it.
So if we have consensus tonight, then we don't need to take it to a vote to then, our vote is to go negotiate something.
Correct.
The mayor can simply go through that, right?
Correct, yeah. We just want to make sure that we're not negotiating without your backing, that we're doing something that's going to get a big thumbs down when we bring it back to you for an action vote.
Depends on how bad the...
Well, Chief Smith is pretty tough. He may... we may bring in lemons and he may send us back with lemons instead of lemonade, who knows, but I don't think that'll be the case.
Councilmember Didi?
So exactly what David Linehan had just stated. I mean, that's what council is saying and you summed it up perfectly. I would ask Chief Smith, you were asked to be a part of this conversation. Do you want to add anything on your side, or you're welcome to not and just wait for the team to come negotiate with your team?
I just woke up, so I'm not, what are we talking about? No, so, okay, so here, so this is what I'm going to say. So, okay, and so I am not the elected officials, right? I'm just the fire chief. But I am also your fire chief. And I've had that conversation with you, Tammy. I am the fire chief for Black Diamond and the citizen, my goal is to have the best fire service for the city of Black Diamond. My goal isn't to serve the fire district. It's the citizens. That's my goal. So we talk about the RFA, so what is the benefit of being a regional fire authority? There's only one benefit to that, and that is you have some control if you could become part of that authority, because a couple of your council members would be part of that management. The real reason, now, I've been in South King County for 30 years. I helped. I was the president of the King County Fire Chiefs when we started the regional fire authority process. So the reason there's a regional fire authority is so that you can use the benefit service charge. That's the reason there's a there is a regional fire authority. Fire districts can, anything a regional fire authority can do, a fire district could do. So what I see here, and so if that's something that we want to look at in the future, that may be something we want to look at, a benefit service charge, right? And so, but that would be a discussion in the future. I do believe that what's best for everyone is for us to work cooperatively in this. And I believe that once our elected officials see that that the city is you know, really looking at doing something together with a long-term goal. We all know things that take, you know, it's taken me 30 years to merge three fire districts together. So you cannot be, nothing happens quick. So if we can work together, come up with a good way of, the fire department's going to cost you X amount of dollars regardless how you do it, correct? So the real goal of us working together and merging fire departments is, where we used to have three fire chiefs and six secretaries, we now have two fire, you know, a fire chief, a deputy chief, and two secretaries. And all those other monies now are put into firefighters, boots on the ground. So instead of, and you could form your own fire department, hire a fire chief, hire a secretary, hire all these other people, but there are not the boots on the ground. So when we work together, and I always say, never say that we can do stuff cheaper, because we cannot do anything cheaper. What we can do is spend the money that we do have more wisely and have more resources. We cannot have doing stuff together does not make it cheaper. We all spend the same amount of money. What it does do, instead of paying for fire chiefs and secretaries, we are paying for firefighters. And so that's where most of your money's going. You're not paying for, if you start your own fire department, you're going to be paying for a fire chief, a secretary, and not for those firefighters. This way, all your money is going towards the real people that do the job. So that's the important thing there. But yes, I believe that if the city says, yeah, okay, this is something we seriously want to do, and we work towards that, I believe our board is more than willing to work cooperatively with the city of Black Diamond, because that's what we've been doing for 15 years, and we want to continue to do that. And there just needs to be some type of a path, right? Because our budget is as big as the city's budget. And so we have a strategic plan, and it ended this year. We need to write a new strategic plan. So it's kind of hard to do when you don't know where you're going. So it's important to us to do that too. But what I can say is we're all about mutual cooperation and getting things done. And we know things don't happen overnight. So let's sit down and figure this out and move forward, because we've been really stagnant. And so we need to move forward. Your city's growing by leaps and bounds. You have a new fire station come in. You have a lot of decisions that need to be made. And you know, I really want to help you do that. I'm not doing this because I want something for the fire district. I want this for the citizens of our greater community. And so at some point, the city of Black Diamond is probably going to look at areas to annex, right? Not today. What we do today is just laying the groundwork for the future, the people in the future. So at some point, the city of Black Diamond is probably going to want to expand, and where you're not going to expand east, you're not going to expand north, because you're right up against Maple Valley. So you can expand west, which includes the fire district. One of the nice things about having pre-annexation areas, if you're already providing services in that area, it's a lot easier to annex areas into your city. So that there are a lot of benefits that come with that. So, but we're ready to sit down and work hard to work this out, and make it make the fire department good for everybody and at a reasonable cost for everybody. But I think our board wants to see where where our citizens are. I mean, obviously your study showed that you're, and I don't like to say your fair share, right? Because what's fair, but have we been subsidizing the city of Black Diamond? Maybe, but we also remember that the Station 98 serves not just the city, but also the district. But we do need to figure out that fine line of, because I'll tell you, one of the first things that's probably going to happen if we get these additional dollars from the city, we're probably going to put Station 98 on 24s with career staff. That's probably one of the, so what are you going to get for your, you're going to get a lot of bang for your buck, because that's one of the first things we really need to do, because it's very hard to manage the system we have now with volunteers staffing at night. That worked really good in the 70s. This is the future. And volunteer fire departments aren't what they used to be. Not because we don't like them. It's just, how do you find the people to spend all that time to be a volunteer? And you got to, they're not just a volunteer firefighter. They have to be an EMT. They need to be able to drive the fire apparatus, all of those things. And it's, unless you have a volunteer that's sitting around for 5 or 6 years, that's not going to happen. So anyway. We're ready to do it.
Thank you, Chief Smith. Yep. Councilmember De Leon.
Thank you. That does help answer my other question that I had about when we were weighing of various options, was really about the role of volunteer versus career or professional firefighters, paid firefighters. And that was kind of one thing that I was looking for is if we are to continue in these kinds of conversations, what would that level of service look like when it comes to the future of our city relying more heavily on career firefighters. So I would be interested in a walkthrough more on that.
And that's what we need to, that's what you need to be looking at, is your level of service, right? What level of service, and you now have, you've reached that threshold where you're over X amount of people per square mile, and you need to step up to that next threshold for fire service. And I'd be happy to share with you what that is. Tammy knows what that is. That was what we looked at when we did our ad hoc. We didn't look at what the service was like today. We looked at what does it need to be when this growth takes place. And so I'd be happy to share any of that with you.
I think that would be really helpful for us to go through that. And thank you.
Yes.
So do we have any, you've given us direction. Do you have any further discussion, or do you want to adjourn the meeting?
Do you have clear direction from us? Do we need to clarify anything? I think we
no, I think Chief Smith has clarified their position, and you've clarified our position. So I think that we can move forward and come back to you with what we come up with.
Awesome. Let's move forward together.
Okay.
I make a motion to adjourn.
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Meeting adjourned. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.